A community that knows itself takes care of itself. The stories of those who live in the Matsu Borough are as varied as the people themselves. Some you have heard. Some, perhaps, you have not. This is Voices of the Matsu, bringing our stories to life.
But they're real kids. They're real kids, just like every other kid on the planet. It's universal.
Hi, I'm Emily Forstner, your host today, in the episode we call Bonus Family. Throughout this program, we talk a lot about community, the what's, the where's, the who's and why's of those smaller groups that make community. And today, we connect with another, foster families. A foster family who believes more in adding to than taking away.
And I tell them, hey, you get a bonus family. We are your bonus family. And I'm so thankful that our stories came together, that now we know each other too.
Imagine a story of a little girl who grew up to be a mom and then decided, you know what? I could be more mom. So she became a foster mom. But listen carefully, because this isn't just any foster mom or any foster family.
I was raised in a trailer court in the corner of Muldoon and DeBar. My mom was single with six kids. I'm number five. And my mom loved us all a lot, but she went from crisis to crisis, and she was not able to adequately care for us. People in the community stepped up and stepped up and stepped up. Various people, our landlord, our pastor, strangers leaving groceries on our doorstep, many people trying to help my mom and help the kids. They saw like, oh, this is bad. This is not going the right way. And I was, as a kid, you don't know how much help you're getting and what it means for your future. I am eternally grateful for my community in Anchorage and all the people who loved my mom and loved us kids.
The foster mom on today's show remains anonymous for confidentiality reasons. For now, we can think of her as Elizabeth. I got to know Elizabeth over the phone. She was able to take leave from that productive chaos that happens in a house full of children and took leave to talk with me in her car, in her driveway. Elizabeth told me that she started thinking about becoming a foster parent in about 2006 when she and her husband and family lived in Arizona.
They had so many foster kids in the system in Arizona that they were bringing them to homeless shelters, and I was horrified.
Crisis in foster care isn't particular to Arizona. It's across the country. For every 1,000 children, there's about 3 in foster care. Alaska joins West Virginia and Montana for having the highest rate of foster care. The Office of Child Services, or OCS as we know it, shows 2,674 children in out-of-home foster care and about half as many licensed homes. These are grim numbers, followed with grim stories.
Yeah, well, not how could I do fostering? How could I do something? I just wanted to do what's the most good I could do. And so I realized fostering would be a good, if I'm a mom and I do mom 24/7, I can do more mom. I could certainly have more kids.
There's a myth. And yes, I know myths are created by truths that are stretched into legend, but there is a myth that all foster children are broken, rough, hard, hardened. Elizabeth says, that's not true.
Each situation is unique, so this is a general statement. But we're not all given the same deck of cards. We are born into different situations with different paths and different tools to cope with what's thrown at us.
Kids, just like Elizabeth.
I was not in foster care, although I've been told by multiple social workers if that were to happen today, intervention would have happened and we likely would have been in foster care. I think it might have sped up the help my mom was able to receive, might have highlighted more, because like I said, my mom loved us a lot. but she didn't have the tools necessary to care for us adequately. You know, your neighbors looked out for you. The church looked out for you. People stepped in. Now I think a lot of people kind of step back and expect the government to do that. The government is not a replacement for family. And I think that kids in foster homes can do very well when it's treated as a family. Yes, it is a broken system, and that's why they need a lot of just real people loving kids well.
People like her first grade teacher, Mrs. Jackson.
Oh my goodness, I adored this woman, and I just wanted to please her. One day she came to me, and she told me, she's like, that is some good coloring. Look at that. Beautiful. I don't know if I've ever seen such fine coloring. Do you think you might be able to color some pictures from my walls? I don't have enough coloring pages on my walls. I need more pictures up here. Could I ask your mom permission? She wrote a note to my mom asking permission for me to stay after school and color pictures for her wall. And I got the signed permission slip. And I was just so proud to be sitting there with Mrs. Jackson and making beautiful pictures, painstakingly slow, so I never went out of the lines and she could put those on her wall. It wasn't until I was an adult that I realized Mrs. Jackson did not need beautiful pictures for her wall. She saw a chaotic home life, and she knew this little girl needs some good one-on-one adult time. She needs some time out of the chaos. She needs a little extra. And I'm forever thankful for Mrs. Jackson doing that for me.
Don't get it wrong. Elizabeth's story is not without its struggles. She found herself homeless as a teen, when a chance encounter through a church changed her life.
My mom was not in state. One of my dads is rough, and I got kicked out. So when I was a homeless teenager, there was a girl named Charity, adult daughter, who took me in. Didn't know me at all, and just let me live at her house for a week.
Years later, another chance encounter.
So I went to this conference in Anchorage, and I wasn't even a foster parent yet, but I was like, wow, what is all this good stuff? So that was where we learned about Safe Families for Children for the first time, and it was Beacon Hill bringing them in. I didn't actually fit any of the categories of who was invited, but I just liked all the people, so I showed up. And in that meeting, there were probably 15, 20 people, and they went around the room, everyone introduced themselves, and everybody gave their titles, and they said, oh, I do this and this and this. And
it was just about this time when Elizabeth heard the name Charity.
I was like, wait, that lady introduced herself and said her name was Charity. Could that be the Charity who took me in when I was a homeless teenager? So, yes, it is. And Charity Carmody.
Charity Carmody is a woman who thinks big. She was one of the founders of Beacon Hill and Safe Families.
And so I got to tell her in that very meeting, hey, you took me in as a homeless teenager. You did Safe Families for Children for me.
Let me interject real quickly. Safe Families. That's a program through Beacon Hill that supports vulnerable children at risk in an upstream service. Being upstream, they are not connected to OCS or a government system. They are outside, upstream of that system. So before they need a greater intervention, they can find safe families that host these children while the families get their feet on the ground. And note the difference. It's called a hosting accommodation, not a foster family. Now, back to Elizabeth.
So we had a lovely cry together.
Tears that led Elizabeth to become an ambassador for Beacon Hill.
I just heard what they were doing, and I thought they were awesome. They were like, hey, we feel like the Office of Children's Services is not doing a very good job. We don't think it's our job to criticize them or point at them. They don't need that. They've got that plenty of places. We think we need to come alongside and help them. And so they just went to them and said, hey, what do you need? Like, we need a visitation center. We need places that aren't just McDonald's Playland for our parents to be able to spend quality time with their kids. And that needs to be supervised in most cases. So they're like, okay, done. They're like, we need help with the visitation rooms we have here at the Office of Children's Services. They need to be updated, new furniture, painting, et cetera. Anyway, they just did that. They did all those things. And I liked what they were about. I wasn't a foster parent yet. I was just like, oh, I want to be a foster parent.
And so that is exactly what she did.
I have never signed up to be an emergency placement, so it's more organized. My kids have usually already spent time in an emergency foster home, and then they come to my home. So it's arranged between the parents of the emergency foster home and my home of what's a good time. And I usually drive to pick them up.
Elizabeth said the benefits of fostering are tremendous.
You can never give these kids as much as they will give to you.
Not everyone should be a foster parent, though. There's lots of ways to give. Elizabeth has this going for her. She knows firsthand what it feels like to be separated from family, even if that family is dysfunctional.
There was a time I went to California as a little girl, and I went with my stepfather at that time. And my mom wasn't able to fly down there for 4 months. And I was so sad. I only had 4 months. I was never removed from my mom by the state. And yet, I was the saddest kid, I thought, on the planet. I would look up at the sky at night and see the planes, like the dots of the planes moving, you know, across. And I would just cry and say, I want my mom. I want my mom. I want my mom. I want to be with my mom. And it's the same for these foster kids. They love their parents. They want their parents, you know. They want their mom. They love their mom. Their mom knows them. Whatever difficulty, whatever choices that their mom and or dad have made, they still love them. And I believe in most circumstances, the parents really love their kids and do not want to harm them in any way. They don't want to neglect them.
When Elizabeth first started fostering children, she was intent on keeping that kinship, that connection between families, because one family doesn't have to end when another one begins.
You can't do kinship one-sided. It's the biological family of my foster children that reinforces that kinship.
When you have kinship, it's hard to figure out who's adopting who. Elizabeth and her husband adopted their first three foster children.
They lived with me for a year, and then they went back to live with her for a year and a half, and then they came back to live with me again. Which sometimes that's the story, not always. That's been my only experience with children coming back. But my husband said if those children ever go back into the foster care system, they live here because those are our children too. So that they would never be in a different foster home. And after 2 more years, we adopted them. Biological mother has been 20 months sober. She's very proud of that. And we see her regularly. We do many, many, many things together. She has chosen me as a sister, and she is grateful. And she thanks me for keeping her three kids together. And she says, you are my sister. And she respects me and she loves me. And it's mutual. I respect her and I love her.
So I wondered, what's the definition of kinship? When you adopt children and the biological mother becomes your sister, what's the definition?
Chosen family. 100%. 100% chosen family. This is my kin. My sister, she loves her children fiercely, and she loves me, and she honors me.
Kinship. Chosen families. That's important because Elizabeth and her husband are not Alaska Native, and their three adopted children are. In fact, Alaska Native children inordinately represent foster care in Alaska. 70% of all children in foster care are Alaska Natives, and only 14% of non-child-specific homes meet the standards for the Indian Child Welfare Act. So how does it happen that Elizabeth and her husband, both non-Native, become recognized by particular tribes as part of the family? That's kinship. That's chosen family.
There was a time I was in my children's village, and a matriarch of the family had recently passed away. And people came to the house together. They were going to pray. They were going to clean a little bit. It's just what you do. You take care of them. And I felt awkward, and I was an outsider, and I didn't want to be in the way of their traditions, and I didn't belong. And I was like, ooh, and I apologized. I said, okay, I will leave. Sorry, you guys continue. And I was told by half a dozen different people looking at me directly and saying, you are our family. You are welcome. And I just cried. I was welcome. They valued me as family, and they wanted me there for this special time. I felt really loved and very much included.
Chosen family.
This is a situation where the tribe actually said, hey, can this kid live with you? His cousin. And I told them, I said, the state will not let me because Office of Children's Services has a limit of 8 children. And I have 8 children in my home right now, so they can't. And they said, will you please just ask? My husband was very hesitant, like, hey, we got a lot of kids. I don't know about that. And I was like, well, sweetheart, the tribe reached out to us. The state is going to say, no, we have 8 children. They won't let us. And I love this mama very much. I know her well. And if, you know, it's possible, it'd be good. He's like, okay, we can ask. So we went to the state and asked for, it's called a variance, to allow you to have more children than than 8. And the state said, haha, no. So I went back to the tribe and said, no, they definitely said no. And that was the first time that they formally said, you are our family. And I was like, I'm your family? And they said, yes. And we're very thankful that you have taken such good care of our children. And they said, now, could you go back to Office of Children's Services and ask them again if this child could stay with you? So I went back to them and I said, so I'm family? And they had the written documents. And their faces, oh, you're family, huh? I'm like, who knew? And they approved it. And they said this little boy could live with us.
This is kinship.
The beauty of having interactions with the biological families of my adopted children is we sometimes happen upon wonderful circumstances, like when my oldest of my adopted children went hunting. He got a duck. He came back. It was the first animal he had ever gotten. He went with my oldest biological son. He brings home this duck. He is so proud. I was somewhat horrified as the beak seemed to be shot off. I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't look at this. And he is grinning from ear to ear. I got a duck. His biological grandmother was sitting at my table and she smiled at him too. And she grabbed that duck right out of his hands and she kept smiling and she said, your first kill goes to your elders. I am your elder, and I will make a nice duck stew. I was so sad. His face, he's like, wait, what? That's yours? That's the culture, and that's the tradition. And, he adjusted, and he appreciated it later, not right at that moment. Because he's like, wait, that's mine. But fast forward to his younger sister, when she got her first rabbit, she was so proud. She skinned it. She gave the skin, not tan, but she gave it to one grandmother and she gave the meat to the other grandmother and said, this is my first kill. And I know my first kill goes to my elders.
Well, I talked to Elizabeth while she sat in her car where it was nice and quiet, but maybe not so warm. She said, yes, they are continuing to foster children. And I don't know how many, but the book Cheaper by the Dozen rang a bell. And I imagined that every time a new foster child entered that door, they would hear something like this.
I'll love you forever. I didn't know you before, but I know you now. And, you know, God brought us together, so you've got me.
But just like in the song, one person says, I got you, babe, and the other one says, I got you, babe, and pretty soon they're singing it in harmony. That's kinship.
I gave her a sweatshirt that says family is more than blood because she calls me sister. And she will call me the sister to everyone. We are not biologically related. But she tells the police, this is my sister. And then they're like, okay, you are her sister. I'm like, well, hold on. yes, Not legally. But we're family.
There is one more foster care myth that needs to be debunked here, and that's about the money. There is a myth that foster families do this for the cash. Granted, every child receives a stipend of just under $30 a day. This is to cover food, clothing, school supplies, fees, transportation. Consider this.
Yes. I had 5 children with learner's permits all at the same time.
No.
Yes. I thought my road should come with a warning.
I'll admit, that's a frightening thought. And when I do the math, $30 a day doesn't even cover insurance. All the same, Elizabeth will tell you that fostering in the intersection of cultures is all worth it.
I believe living cross-cultural is very rich. I think the world is so big, and when you grow up without exposure to different cultures, your mindset is very narrow. You think the whole world lives like this. The whole world does not live like that. It is your country, your, you know, state, your town, and your family. It's very small. I think sometimes the older you get, even without going to a different culture, you start learning, oh, everybody didn't grow up the way I grew up. This is not the only way the world works. Look at these people. Look at those people. But if you have the opportunity to travel and experience different cultures, you're like, oh, wow, it's even bigger. And I have a huge respect and awe for the different values and traditions.
Laughter. A lot of laughter. But at the end of the day, Elizabeth wants more than that for her children, and they are absolutely all her children.
100%. 100%. They are my kids. 100%. And I do everything within my ability to treat my biological children and my foster children the same. You know, there's a certain amount of universal, like we're all created in the image of God. We have that as our base. We laugh about the same things. We cry about the same things. But there's a beauty in the strengths of different cultures. This culture has this wonderful strength. This other culture has this wonderful strength. And so I believe you grow as you see what each one has. I believe Native Alaskan culture is much more family-oriented than Western American culture. That many Western Americans tend to be individualistic and not rely on each other. That's not always healthy. It is good to have family. It is good to say, hey, I need some help here, and rely on each other.
100% her kids. It makes sense that she would want 100% more.
That the next generation will say there's a healthier way. That I don't want to be separated. I don't want my children separated from me. There's a way that I can love my children and ask for help when I need help, to where neglect or abuse doesn't have to happen. In a perfect world, children will be raised by their biological mother and their biological father. We don't live in a perfect world. We live in a very broken world. I think that each generation can give a hand up and live healthier than the one before. I think if I can show them, hey, this is what I see, you know, a very imperfect family that has some healthier coping skills, but I can give that to my kids. I want that for my children.
Once upon a time, there was a little girl growing up in a trailer park on Muldoon in Anchorage. And with the help and support of family and friends and churches and people like Mrs. Jackson, she grows up, and her story is one of stability and structure and love. And she shares this with a lot of kids. And she brings together entire communities, communities that are hundreds of miles apart, of different cultures with different languages. And she wants one thing.
I think that being humble enough to ask for help is one of the most important things I want my former foster children to take away. That it's okay to say, I need help. it's okay to be honest. I think that honesty is so important for stopping abuse or neglect before it happens. You have to be real. And it's amazing that if those walls are down, how much other people are able to be real. Like, it loses its power.
It's not often that you can meet someone for the first time over the phone while they sit in their car. Elizabeth had me laughing and crying and crying and laughing. It was amazing.
I'm not amazing. That actually, so forgive me, Emily. I am not amazing. I can't accept that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I am just a person. I mean, I guess maybe a closing thought is it's just a normal person. It's just an imperfect family with some, you know, with a healthier lifestyle. Like, you don't have to be an amazing person. You're an average person. And you grow and you learn. There's nothing amazing about me. I'm just a person. I'm just a person. And I love kids. And I love their families. I love meeting people. I love knowing people. And these kids deserve families. They deserve real families.
I still think it was pretty amazing. We are all family, separated by migration. It's up to us to decide how wide or how close we keep that circle. Today's story, it's nice to know that for Elizabeth,
love is amazing. Love wins.
That's it for today's episode for Voices of the Mat-Su. If you have a story or know of someone who does, let us know. Until next time, it's been nice getting to know each other a little bit more. Listeners should note that the Office of Children's Services has reduced the maximum number of children in a home from 8 to 6. Those wanting to know more about safe families or fostering can contact Beacon Hill at info@beaconhill.com or by listening to the October 20th Valley Edition broadcast found right here at Big Cabbage Radio. Information for this show was found on the State Alaska Office of Children's Services website, childtrends.org, and the Alaska Impact Alliance. Thanks for listening. Stay good out there.
This was Voices of the Mat-Su, sharing stories told by those who live in the Mat-Su borough. To revisit this and past stories, go to bigcabbageradio.org. This project is funded by a grant from the Mat-Su Health Foundation and is produced by Emily Forstner for Big Cabbage Radio. The views expressed in Voices of the Mat-Su do not represent the views of Big Cabbage Radio or the Mat-Su Health Foundation. Comments or questions about this show may be sent to voices@bigcabbageradio.org.